We'll hear argument now in the case of United States against Hawkins.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Mr. Thiers.
May it please the Court, my name is James Thiers. I'm attorney for the appellant, Bernard Hawkins. Your Honors, on May 28, 2003, Mr. Hawkins was had an active warrant issued for his failure to appear at a revocation of supervised release hearing. United States Marshals were attempting to serve that warrant on Mr. Hawkins when they came into contact with him. He struggled with them, and one of the agents sustained minor injuries. Although the statute to which Mr. Hawkins pled guilty to prescribes a maximum penalty of 20 years for that offense, initially the guidelines were not as harsh on him. Based on the nature of the injuries and based on his prior criminal history, it's feasible that Mr. Hawkins would have been sentenced to a term of imprisonment from 12 to 18 months, possibly 15 to 21 months. However, due to prior convictions for escape, which he had two of at that time, his
guidelines... Slippery little fellow, isn't he?
I'm sorry?
He's kind of a slippery fellow, isn't he?
Well, he has a tendency to walk away to...
He has a tendency not to want to go to jail. I can't blame him a bit.
Well, Your Honor, no one wants to go to jail, obviously, and you'll note that his prior escapes were not forcible escapes, they were walkaways, and this court has dealt with walkaways previously, as the Pittman case and Bryant. A Bryant case, I believe, obviously deals with that issue. However, Your Honor, it's Hawkins' contention that a categorical approach to analysis of prior convictions deprives him of the Sixth Amendment right as defined by Blakely, as defined by Apprendi, and as defined by Booker. This court ruled in Bryant, citing other cases, that practical difficulties and potentials for inconsistent treatment of defendants support the use of a categorical approach as compared to a case-by-case analysis. And the recent cases that have come down, Blakely, Booker, Apprendi, Ring.
What fact was found in this case by a preponderance?
The use of force, the actual use, the threatened use, or the serious potential. The crime of violence obviously is defined in the guidelines, and it's defined as one that has as an element the actual use or the threatened use of force.
That's a question about what is the nature of the prior. It's not a question about what the defendant did in this case, is it?
Well, it is a...
We have made it clear, the Supreme Court made it clear in Taylor, that this is not a case-specific judgment. It's a question of classifying the nature of the prior.
Well, Taylor was before Blakely. Taylor was before Ring and Apprendi.
Yeah, but why should we change from a view that this is just a legal classification question to something else?
Well, because it deprives the defendant of a Sixth Amendment right.
It sounds like you're arguing that Almendarez-Torres was wrongly decided. But as we have now said several times today, we're not in the business of overruling the Supreme Court. We're not going to overrule Taylor. We're not going to overrule Almendarez-Torres. I mean, you're perfectly entitled to preserve that issue for a cert petition, asking them to overrule these decisions, but it's not our portfolio.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that Almendarez can be distinguished. First of all, Almendarez was not a guidelines case. Almendarez was more a case of statutory interpretation. The defendant in that case was complaining that a subsection of the statute with which he was found, or which was used to enhance his sentence, he was arguing a statutory interpretation issue. It was not a guidelines issue. And Blakely now has come along. Blakely squarely deals with the guidelines, and Blakely says any fact that increases a defendant's defendant's sentence beyond that which is...
No, it doesn't say that. it says any fact other than a prior conviction, which increases, etc. Every time it begins any fact, it includes the qualification other than a prior conviction.
Yes, sir.
And your problem here is that it's the priors that were used to enhance the sentence.
The prior convictions, Your Honor, were used to move Mr. Hawkins' sentence across the guideline table. Initially, the guidelines treated this, if he had no prior convictions whatsoever, he would have been looking at about 6 to 10 months. However, because of his priors, he moved across the table now to 18 to 21 months, or 15 to 21. You might call it principle of verticality, Judge. Taking a defendant down the chart where his penalties are increased by enhancing, by going down that chart, that involves factual determinations beyond merely whether he has a prior conviction. The prior convictions were taken into account. That's why he was looking at 15 to 21 months. Unfortunately for him, the prior convictions resulted in a greatly substantial sentence. And Your Honor, Hawkins would argue that practical difficulties, concerns of judicial economy, do not override the Sixth Amendment. The Sixth Amendment prevails over the concerns of timely efficiency of court.
Are you, counsel, making any other argument under Booker other than the one about the enhancement for his priors?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, so you're not asserting the argument that he's entitled to the benefit of the Supreme Court's remedial decision, independent of whether there was a Sixth Amendment violation in this case?
Well, Your Honor, let me backtrack a little bit. It seems that the Booker decision does offer to a defendant a remedial. In other words, it's an advisory
remedy, of course, for a violation. But the problem here is there's no violation unless we depart from Almendarez-Torres.
Well, Your Honor, the Almendarez-Torres needs to be interpreted in light of Blakely. The decision, again, Judge, was more of a statutory interpretation as compared to a guidelines. And it was not. There's no indication that the court made a factual determination as to the nature of the prior convictions. In this case, the district court judge had to make a determination that the prior convictions were crimes of violence. A categorical approach is the shortcut to making that determination. As a matter of fact, there was not even a factual determination made. There was no consideration of what those prior convictions consisted of. It was simply, it's an escape, therefore it's a crime of violence, therefore we're going to enhance your penalty.
So to clarify, you are or you are not making an independent argument under the remedial portion of the Booker decision that in the absence of a Sixth Amendment violation, your client is still entitled to a remand for resentencing on a discretionary basis?
I am, Judge.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mr. Lanter.
May it please the Court, Dean Lanter representing the United States, Assistant U.S. Attorney. Government's position in this case is that the district court correctly determined that Mr. Hawkins' two prior convictions were for crimes of violence. Government's position is further is that that is purely a legal determination. It was uncontested at the sentencing that Mr. Hawkins had two prior felony convictions under the federal escape statute. After that, the only thing the district judge did was not make any factual determinations, but simply apply the law in Bryant and Taylor and Almendarez-Torres to the set of facts to make the determination that Mr. Hawkins was a career offender. There was no factual determinations that the district court had to make. It was completely uncontested the circumstances under the guidelines that qualified Mr. Hawkins as a career offender. As this court recently in United States versus Pittman last fall recognized, it indicated again that nothing in Blakely nor Booker at the time, before the Supreme Court came out with Booker last month or 2 months ago, disturbed Almendarez-Torres. And the government's position is that Almendarez-Torres is still still the law, and that, as the court noted, any enhancement other than a prior conviction is something that would encroach in the area of Booker. In this case, there was nothing other than the prior convictions. Regarding the issue of whether or not there is the sentence should be remanded or the cause should be remanded to the district court for any remedial action, the government's position is that this case is distinguishable from Palladino, decided last week, in the sense that there was no Booker error or Booker issue in this case. Simply application of Almendarez to the guidelines, and there was nothing other than the prior convictions that enhanced Mr. Hawkins' sentence. It's also interesting to note that the district court at the sentencing also denied Mr. Hawkins' request for a downward departure aside from the Booker issues. The court indicated as to the request for departure by the defendant, this being a departure to depart downward in the guidelines, because his sentence was overrepresented by his past criminal conduct, district court noted on page 12 of the sentencing transcript, quote, as to the request for departure by the defendant, although departure may be authorized in this case, I choose not to depart because I believe departure here is just not warranted under the circumstances. Government's position is that that is insight into the district court's views in the event that this case were to be considered for limited remedial remand to determine if the same sentence would be imposed.
What do you make of this language in the remedial opinion in Booker and Fanfan, and it's the court's application of its holdings to Fanfan? And I'm quoting, thus, Fanfan's sentence does not violate the Sixth Amendment. Nonetheless, the government and the defendant, should he so choose, may seek resentencing under the system set forth in today's opinions.
Your Honor, the government's position is that, and we're coming into sort of the areas that Palladino and Lee addressed late last week, and the government's position would be that even assuming that Palladino is correct, that we have insight into Judge Moody's thought processes in this case, and it would fit into circumstances mentioned in Lee and Palladino so that there is no reason for the limited remand.
Right. I understand that with respect to the particular fact pattern in this case and what the judge said at the time of sentencing, but as a legal matter, what's the government's position on that where there isn't a Sixth Amendment violation?
Where there is not a Sixth Amendment violation, the government's position would be that there is no... And honestly, the government is reviewing its options under Palladino and some other things right now, but the government's position is that obviously we're not going to quarrel with what the Supreme Court indicated.
I don't think you understand the question being asked, at least if I understand the question being asked. This has nothing to do with Palladino and with plain error. It has to do with the question whether the Booker, whether Justice Breyer's majority opinion in Booker, which says that the mandatory nature of the guidelines is being abolished as a remedy, also applies even though it is not being used as a remedy. Right, that's a merits question. It has nothing to do with plain error. It has to do with how the world proceeds forward from here.
And if I understand the question correctly, which I'm not certain that I do, but I'm trying the best I can, that unless there is a Booker violation, the government does not believe there would be a purpose to remand if the district court...
This has nothing to do with remands. Perhaps you would want to collect the view of the United States government and let us know.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. Anything further, Mr. Theros?
Yes, Your Honor. I have a brief rebuttal time, please. For the government to say this is a purely legal question, Your Honor, then it was purely legal for the court in Blakely to find that there was unusual hatred or that there was cruelty involved. It's not so much a purely legal question. It's an analysis. Please keep in mind, Mr. Hawkins walked away from detention, did not bust out, did not grab hold of a guard, did not use a weapon. He walked away. Well, the court says, well, there's always he has to be rearrested, so there's the potential for violence when he gets arrested on the
failure. Well, we've already said that, haven't we?
Well, then everything is a crime of violence.
Well, we say escape is a crime of violence, whether it involves walking away or breaking over the wall. We said it.
Well, then every crime is a crime of violence because
no, every
be
crime involving escape is a crime of violence.
The court focuses on the fact that the person has to be rearrested. They're going to go get him. There's going to be a warrant for his arrest because he walked away. Every person who commits a crime is going to have a warrant on him when he gets indicted. Every crime, therefore, is a crime of violence.
That's a very logical position. I mean, do you want us to adopt it?
Your Honor, I think it's a valid point that Mr. Hawkins raised. He raised it in the district court. It was ignored by the district court. It was overruled. But
I don't think the defense bar would join you in your motion.
And please keep in mind also, Pittman case was a plain error case. The defendant did not raise that issue in the district court. This case clearly was raised in the district court. Your standard is de novo, and Mr. Hawkins is asking for the relief requested in the brief. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel, and we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case.